and I enjoy our time together. I just wish in some ways that we live closer together, that we could enjoy that more often. Tonight we're going to be looking at what price is purity. But I would be amiss not in, by way of introduction, to make it plain that each of us are making choices in the spiritual direction that we're traveling. Those choices are limited, but they are spelled out very clear. And it's done in a variety of ways. Back in Isaiah chapter 35 and verse 8, Isaiah would pen that there is a highway and a way, and it's called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it is for those, the wayfaring men, though fools shall not err therein. Now, when you come to the New Testament counterpart of that, in Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14, the highway is the broad way, and the way of holiness is the narrow way. And then back in Jeremiah chapter 21 and verse 8, God says, I have set before you life and death. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 15, I have set before you good and life, evil and death. But what I like about Deuteronomy chapter 30 is not just the either or that is given in verse 15, because four verses later, you have the same life and death being stated. But you find God's desire. Do you know what God's desire for us is? It's almost like He's making this plea. Choose life. That's how that verse ends. That's His sentiments. But you and I will make the choices. Tonight we're going to be looking at two women who were faced with those choices. They had two different philosophies of life. One looked beyond the moment in 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. And the other lived for the moment in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 25. One had enough character that looked beyond the physical attractiveness on the outside and thought more about the purity on the inside. And the other exploited her physical beauty. One succeeded, and one failed. But in these accounts, there is one thing that's similar. Drinking of alcohol is similar in both cases. And you know, the Bible has a great deal to say about drinking alcohol. Now, I'm just going to give you a sample, just by way of alcohol breaks down the moral restraints of a person. Back in Genesis chapter 19 and verses 30 through 38, two daughters got their father intoxicated in order to have incest with him. Do you know the first time that you are introduced to Lot? It's back in Genesis 13 and verse 7, as you have that discourse between the herdsmen of Abraham and then the herdsmen of Lot. And Abraham, being the man that he is, said, we be brethren, you choose which direction to go. And Lot, well, he actually back in chapter 12, but the discourse here is in Genesis 13. And Lot looked out at the plains of Jordan and saw that they were well watered. And the record says that he pitched his tents towards Sodom. Now, do you know the next time you find Lot? He's in Sodom in Genesis 19. Now, I know. I know what the Bible teaches about Lot. The record says that he was a righteous man. He was a just man in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 7. But do you know that Lot lost his entire family? Two daughters came out with him, but they were so morally bankrupt. If you want to know the origin of the Moabites and the Ammonites, then Genesis 38 gives you that. It's two daughters who got their daddy drunk. alcohol removes wisdom. If you want an apt description of a drunk, I'll tell you what it is. Numb, dumb, and lost.
That's right.
They're numb. In Proverbs chapter 23, verses 29 and following, they are dumb. In Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1, and they're lost. In 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 10. The seven woes given in Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 29, brethren, they are so fun. It says, who has woes? Who has sorrows? You know, you cannot watch a football game, and I'm an avid football fan. I enjoy watching football, and I have run into a fellow Minnesota Viking fan, and you know we're far and few in between. But every game, they'll have young people, and they'll be, oh, grab all the gusto, grab all the gusto. Then I wish I could follow that advertisement with a real one. The end of the picture, if you please, of a drunk sitting on the edge of a curb with a paper bag over a bottle, and he has lost everything that he has. Who has woes? Who has sorrows? I know who it is. Who has contentions? Argument? Drunks are argumentative. Who has wounds without a cause? Well, a falling down drunk. Who has babblings? That's just the rantings of a drunk. Have you ever been around a drunk and listened to the rantings of a drunk? Who has redness of eyes? Listen, young people, are you listening to me? Alcohol affects your system and the eyes show it. Do you know who has those six things listed there? In verses 30 through 35, we're told, those who drink alcoholic beverages. I wonder, I just wonder as we're standing here tonight, how many families have been ruined? How many dreams have been shattered? How many marriages have fallen apart because of alcohol? I wonder how many have or are now children who are living in absolute dread every time a drunken parent comes near them. Do you want to know how destructive alcohol is? Ben, I tell you, ask somebody who has lived through it. They'll tell you. It sometimes, it breaks my heart to hear members of the church try to defend social drinking. The Bible never says one positive thing about alcoholic beverage. But they're a part of the sins that we're going to be looking at tonight. Purim Vashti. The text is going to be taken from Esther chapter 1, verses 5 through 22. I'm not going to be reading the text, but if you want to turn there, then I welcome you to do that. And we're just going to make some points about the story, because we have two women to look at tonight. There's a king by the name of Ahasuerus, and he made a feast for the great and the small in his kingdom that he might show them his glory in verse 4. Wine is in ample supply among the men, and the king is going to invite his wife into the midst of that scene. And what we have seen in regards to alcohol, this is what he is inviting her into. He's inviting her into a group of men who are unwise, miserably, and sexually, at least unguarded. Now that's what he's asking her to. Now I have a question for you. What husband would want to invite his wife into a scene like that? I think I can tell you why this king did. This king looked at his wife as though she was a possession rather than a wife to be cherished and loved. How vastly different from what the New Testament teaches about the husband and wife relationship. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28 and 29, it says that a husband is to love his wife like he loves his own body. Now, for some of you fellas, that's a lot of, isn't it? There's no man hates his own flesh. Ladies, those of you who are Christian ladies, even if you're not a Christian lady, there ought to be a respect that's given by the husband to where you cherish your wife. To his shame, this king does not respect his mate. And so he's going to invite her. It's the seventh day, by the way. And the king's heart is merry with wine. Have you ever noticed the Jekyll and Hyde in most drunks? Well, I can tell you, won't harm anything. But I was raised in that kind of a home. And I have experienced it all of my growing up years. And most drunks have that Jekyll Hyde. This is the Jekyll. He's happy. I'll show you the Hyde in a minute. So he's happy. And so he tells his servants, I want you to go and I want you to get my wife and bring her in here with the royal crown. And I want the people to see her because she is fair to look upon. Now, there are some things that you need to keep in mind in regard to the scene. This is an all-men party. Look at chapter 1, verse 3, and then again verse 9. The women were off with the queen. The men are all with the king. None of them were forced to drink the king's wine, verses 7 and 8. But it was in ample supply to everyone in verse 11. Verse 10. The king himself is intoxicated. That would be the only reason that he would invite his wife into a scene like this to display herself. In other words, she's going to come unveiled. In that time and in that custom, that would have been a thing that was only the privilege that the husband could see. The king would not allow those men to touch his wife. He just wanted them to want to. Now, men who are drunk and have little moral restraint, she recognized that this would be a scene that would lend itself, at least on the surface, to be a sexually charged scene. Do you know that the Bible says that if you look upon a woman to lust, you have committed adultery already in your heart, Matthew 5 and verse 28? Sometimes. You have to be careful what you say in front of preachers, you know. Sometimes a member will mention a movie that they have went to. Husbands and wives, I have some questions. For God, I have you a question. Would you take your mate into a movie where they're parading new people? Would you? I knew a man years ago when they first came out with HBO. And my wife and I, we were out visiting him, and he made this statement. He said, looking at naked women doesn't bother me. Do you believe that? What are we watching in movies and TV? We have a policy in our house that if it is not decent enough for our daughter, then it's not decent enough for us. You better be careful what you're parading in front of your husband and your wives for them to see. So the queen, realizing exactly what the husband wanted of her, parade yourself in front of these men that they can see what I have and want it. And she absolutely refused to do that. Now, you know, for a queen to say no to the king, that's a serious thing. I mean, you have to understand that. She has to realize the seriousness of her position. You're not going to escape this without some kind of a consequence. And she realized that, but here was a woman who valued purity and modesty, even in the face of certain repercussions. You know, to look back into a pagan kingdom and see that kind of courage is refreshing. You know, Vashti was a woman who understood that what was on the outside does not determine a woman's value. Now, upon consideration, so do you and I. How many times have you met somebody who initially you thought were physically attractive? But the more you got to know them, the less attractive they were. And on the other side of that, how many times have you met somebody who did not strike you as being physically attractive, but then the more you got to know them, the better looking they got? You know why that is? Because what's on the inside of the person will eventually show on the outside. It took me the longest time with my wife. But now she calls me handsome. She knew it wasn't what was on the outside. She refused to be placed into a position to inflame the passions of men. And the king, when he heard that, the record says in verse 12 that he was wroth and the anger burned in him. Now there's the Hyde. We saw the Jekyll. Now see the Hyde. And so one of his servants, seeing that the king is upset, he ventures a suggestion. Here's the suggestion. He says, let's make a law by the Medes and Persians, in other words, that cannot be changed, that Vashti should not appear ever again before the king. And her estate would be taken from her and given to another who is better. The king liked the idea, and so they did. But then you listen. You understand that what she lost is not the reason for her being in this record. That's not why she's here. She is recorded, written in this book, is heaven's recognition of her purity and modesty, that every generation of Bible students down through the years will know of this woman's courage. She emulated in a time when modesty was not the norm, and as it is today, what would be taught in the New Testament in regards to modesty for women. In 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verses 3 and 4 teaches that a woman is to be dressed modestly, shamefacedly. Not the plaiting of the hair, the wearing of gold, or the wearing of garments. Now, we had a couple of ladies come into our assembly some years ago. And the first thing they noticed when they walked in was that women were wearing makeup. They had jewelry on. And she said, boy, are we ever so glad to see this. Because where they were going, they were telling the women that you can't wear makeup. That you can't wear an ornament in your hair. That you can't wear gold jewelry. And these are the passages that they were appealing to. Ben, can I tell you something just by way of passing? Sometimes in the Bible, lesser is denied to elevate the greater. Now let me give you an example of that. In John chapter 6 and verse 27, Jesus says, labor not for the meat that perishes. Now, is Jesus telling us not to work? That would be a contradiction to what is taught in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 10. If you don't If you don't eat, if you don't work, you don't eat. Now, Ben, there's a message for Congress. Let's send down that message. But he's saying, labor then for the meat that endureth unto everlasting life. There is a modesty that not only women are to have, but men as well. And we are dressed in such a way that would reflect who we are. But in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verses 3 and 4, what Peter is emphasizing is the inward man, a quiet and meek spirit which are in the sight of God of great price. You dress in a way that's modest. But what God really likes to see in any child of God is that meek and quiet spirit. They are, in His sight, great friends. If you don't learn anything from this lesson, would you please learn this? The value of a woman is not determined by how much physical beauty she displays, but what people think of her without the display. Purity and modesty are becoming in every generation. Let it be becoming in ours. Herodias' daughter. Now, if you have a copy of the schedule, the passage on there is wrong. It's Mark chapter 6, verse 21 and following, not John chapter 6. Dancing, adultery, revenge, and murder, they are offered up as daily entertainment on television. Now, I don't know how many of you watch the soap operas, and I hope not many of you do. But if you're a soap opera watcher, you see that every day. But immorality, when it is in the lives of evil people, it is anything but entertaining. When sin parades itself, it's a shame. In Jeremiah's day, Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 8, they could not blush at sin. And in many ways, so was our society today. Indecent people suffer because of immorality. John the Baptist is going to be a case of that, simply because he told them the truth. You know what he told Herod and Herodias in Mark chapter 6, verses 17 and 18? He told them that they were not married in the sight of God. He didn't tell them that they were not married civilly. They were married civilly. In fact, the record specifically says that they had married Herodias. But John told him, here's who you married. He said, you married Philip's wife. In other words, God doesn't recognize your marriage. And as is the case always, whenever truth is preached, you have some who will come to it, and you have others who hate it. In John 3, verses 19 through 21. Now, before we get into the dance of Salome, can I point out something that I think is a tendency in every generation, maybe, among young ladies? But for some reason, it seems to be more so in our age and even in the church. Girls are trying to look older than they are. 14-year-olds want to look like they're 16. And the 16-year-old girls want to look like they're 18. I have a question for you. What happens to the girl who at 14 looked 16 and at 16 looked 18? Can I tell you a sad truth? Far too often, they have exchanged high school football games for pregnancy. They have exchanged friends for diapers. They have exchanged college for parenthood. And the boy that got them there, you can't see hide nor hair. We have a daughter who's going to turn 16 in just a couple of weeks. We're letting her use the word boy. But it has to be in a sentence. Beginning with the words, "Listen here, Buster." We had a boy, and he came and he sat on our porch with our daughter. You know, he used to date the girl across the street. And I liked him then. The point I'm making, don't let your kids grow up too fast. All the things that accompany adulthood will come soon enough. Let them stay kids as long as you can. Now, I don't know if Salome, dressed, acted older than her age. But I do know this about her. She was just like her mother. Young man, one of these days, you're going to be picking a future mate. And there is an Old Testament passage back in Ezekiel 16 and verse 44, and it says, "As is the mother, so is the daughter. Before you marry that girl, take a long look at your future mother-in-law. Because in all probability, she's going to turn out the same way." Salome danced before Herod and his guests. And the dancing was anything but harmless. Two stories that illustrate or demonstrate a biblical principle. And then we'll look at a word. A number of years ago, we used to have the teenagers in our house for a Bible study, weekly Bible study. And we had a young girl who was really interested in it until we touched on the subject of dancing. And then she became very offended, and here's the reason why. Her mother and father won a lot of dance contests. In fact, they had trophies all over their house. We went to visit them. Alan and I, and by the way, Alan Eisenhower sends his regards to you. He wanted me to tell you that he misses you. So we went down to the house and we were talking to the father. And guess what? The father was an atheist. He didn't believe in God at all. And so he would have expressed the sentiments given back in Job chapter 21, verse 14 and 15. He would say unto God as they did, "Depart from us, we desire not the knowledge of thy ways. Who is the Almighty that we should serve him? And what profit is there if we should pray unto him?" In other words, this man had no regard for law. So he wasn't worried about the moral implications of what he was going to say. But this is what he said. He said, "Sometimes when I'm dancing with someone other than my wife," said, "it's a turnoff." We have that. You know that. And yet, knowing that, we send our kids, when they're going through a difficult time already between adolescence and adulthood, we send them into an atmosphere where there's going to be physical contact. And we know the results of it. And then there was this young lady, engaged to a non-Christian. She was a Christian, he was a non-Christian. And one evening after work, she went out with some of her workers and went to a dance. Do you know what the non-Christian did? He broke the engagement. Do you know what he said to her? He said, "I thought you were different." Do you know what this girl said to my wife? These are her words. "What have I done? What have I done?" Husbands and wives, I have a question for you. Would you allow your mate to go dancing? I know the answer to that. You would not. Now, why would we put our children in situations that we would find unacceptable for our mate. So Salome danced, and her dance had such an effect that it stirred the passions of her stepfather. This is her stepfather we're talking about. And so Herod, he's so overcome, he said, listen, I'm going to give you whatever you want. That's half of my kingdom. And then he did a foolish thing. He sealed it with a vow. Step back with me for a minute from this particular case. Do you know that making a vow is a serious thing? It is never commanded. It is never even requested. But it is regulated. Two places, God said, if you make a vow unto me, you had better keep it. Back in Numbers chapter 30 and verse 2, Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verses 3 and 4, if you ever make, or if you ever give your word to God, then you had better keep your word. And so here is Salome. She goes to Mama. And she said, what should I ask for? Mothers, can I ask you a question? What would you have responded to your daughter? Here is an opportunity for you to do something for your daughter. What would you have said to her? Would you think, well, here's an opportunity for you to be financially secure? Would you have said to your daughter, ask for a piece of land? Would you have said to your daughter, here's an opportunity to be a part of the political system? What would you have said to your daughter? Oh, no. No. This woman, driven by hate, her answer is swift and deadly. Go tell him you want the head of John the Baptist in the charger. Hate is such a strong emotion. And yet I see it sometimes. Maybe you've been a victim of it. Do you know that hate is a controller? It will enslave you. It will rob you of joy. The person that you hate will invade your thinking day and night. It doesn't hurt them at all. It just comes into your mind day and night. Brethren, don't let hate be a part of your life. Now, I just wonder what John's thinking. When the executioners come, what do you suppose he would even have known why? They were going to take his head. Now, I don't know how that scene was. I don't know if they walked in there carrying one of those big axes. Maybe he'll look at them. There was no hearing. No trial set. No charges made. Would they have told him, listen, John, you're going to lose your head because a woman danced in such an enticing way that she inflamed the lust of the king? What do you suppose John knew? We have two examples before us tonight, and I hope you look at one who elevated purity and modesty, and the other opened the door for immorality. And when immorality has free reign, there's no stopping place. It went from passion to hatred, taking the center stage, and the death of a faithful servant, the forerunner, the Son of God. You and I will choose what direction we're going to follow. Brethren, I pray so fervently that the path we choose will be the one of purity.